Hey, everybody. Welcome in. My name is Barbara, and as always on Tuesdays, we have a great show coming your way. You know, we move it around. We do politics. We do books. We do, you know, community stuff, but we are in political season, ladies and gentlemen, so that's where we are. Our guest today is District 1, one of the two state representatives for our district, Sage Dixon, and he is going to be here to break it down for us from his perspective on what happened in the legislature this last session. And actually, I don't know if we're going to have time, but I've got a couple of questions about peeking in to 2024, things that we can revisit next year. So we are going to take our first break right now. Stay right where you are. It's a good show coming your way, and we'll be right back.
Here, and it's time to see what's new at Grunberg Schloss Collector's Cabinet. They have preparedness and homesteading books and supplies, emergency rations, food storage supplies, ammo and knives, jewelry, ReadyWise foods, and more. They stock items you won't find anywhere else in our area. They buy, sell, and trade, open weekdays, and located on Triangle Drive, just south of the Kootenai Cutoff Road in Ponderay. Grunberg Schloss Collector's Cabinet.
Alabama, Roll On North America Tour, presented by Kenworth.
Song of the South, sweet potato.
July 6th, Spokane Arena.
Play me some mountain music.
With very special guest,
can't you see?
The Marshall Tucker Band.
Can't you see?
Alabama, live.
Roll on along. Roll
on sale now at ticketswest.com.
Gonna play in Texas.
Produced by Outback Presents.
Save now with Bi-Mart's latest membership savings book, arriving exclusively in members' mailboxes this week. Our 16-page book has store-wide savings in every department. From lawn and garden essentials to patio needs, Bi-Mart has you covered for less. Plus, save on pantry essentials, pet supplies, and more. Save now with our latest savings book at Bi-Mart, your employee-owned membership store.
If you have unfiled taxes or are in debt to the IRS, this is important news. The IRS just rolled out a new program to help struggling taxpayers more easily resolve their tax problems. It's called the Taxpayer Relief Initiative, and it opens up powerful new options for people looking to get back on the right track with the IRS. And no one knows this program like the professionals at Optima Tax Relief, America's most trusted tax resolution company. They've resolved over $1 billion in tax debt for their clients and have the expertise and experience to help you. One easy call to Optima can start the process, helping to put an end to your worries of wage garnishment, asset seizure, and other aggressive IRS actions. Make today the beginning of your fresh start with the IRS. Call the experts at Optima Tax Relief now for your free confidential consultation.
Call 800-704-9936. 800-704-9936. 800-704-9936.
Optima Tax Relief.
Some restrictions apply. For complete details, please visit OptimaTaxRelief.com.
Discover credit cards automatically double all the cash back you earn at the end of your first year, which means...
Wait, hold up. Question for the audio engineer.
Go ahead.
Did I read that right? Discover automatically doubles all your cash back?
Yeah, that's what the script says.
So if I get a Discover card right now, I can earn twice the cash back.
Apparently. Wait! Unlimited first-year cash back match, only from Discover. See terms and learn more at discover.com/match.
Keep up to date on everything we're doing at NorthIdahoRadio.com.
Parents were to be advised, and they needed... You know, I said one of these days that was going to happen, that we would be sitting here chatting away and the microphones will be back on the air. Oh, my goodness. Well, all right. Welcome back in, everybody. Here we are. Politics is the topic today. Sage Dixon is our guest. Join me as we say hello and welcome to him. Thank you for being here.
Hi, Barbara. I'm sorry I had engaged you in a long conversation there before we came back from the break.
So I know. But it was interesting.
So, it certainly was.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's start with some of the bills that passed and didn't pass in the legislature. We'll start with health. House Bill 71 regarding gender has been called gender mutilation, physical surgeries, or drugs to change the gender. How did you vote, and what do you think about
it? I voted in favor of that bill, and I think it's an appropriate step for the legislature to take to protect minors in that case. We're in an odd point in our culture right now, in our society, where this is something that really didn't even exist maybe 5 years ago, or definitely 10 years ago. And I think it's something we wanted to protect against, of people being caught up in a cultural moment and making permanent changes to themselves, or parents allowing those changes to happen to their children. So it wasn't easy, because we always prefer to balance the parental rights and go in the favor of that, of parents making decisions for what's best for their children. But in this case, it seemed it was appropriate to put those protections in for minors, so they're not permanently disfigured. And
to be clear, when you say you voted in favor, you voted in favor of making it illegal.
That's correct. Not in favor of allowing those surgeries to happen.
And it's now a felony, and I just agree with that, and I think the legislature did a wise move. Another one is the needle exchange programs are no longer being paid for with taxpayer money. They are not illegal. If a private hospital or a private support group wants to do that, they can, but not with taxpayer money, and that seems to be a good thing too.
Correct. It is a good thing, and I'm almost certain I voted in favor of that as well. I don't see why I wouldn't. I can't remember my specific vote on that one, but that's not a program that I would endorse. So
there are a lot of bills that come before you. I don't know. I mean, it's in the hundreds.
Well, it was about 1,153 that were printed, and we voted on roughly 635. So a lot comes before us all year long, and it's hard to remember everything other than the ones that we specifically work on.
But absolutely, yeah. I think everybody understands that. All right, let's take a look at property tax overhaul. How did you vote, and what is the macro? What's the information our audience needs to take home on this one?
This was a tough one. This is something that was very important to nearly everybody coming into this session because of the way our assessments have been rising and the way it affects our property taxes. So there were three main proposals that started off in the session. A senator had been working on it all in the interim and had his version, which was solely directed at homeowners. There was a version from a House member that was about indexing the homeowners exemption. So as the economy is rising and assessments are rising, that homeowners exemption would rise. And then there was another more detailed package that had to do with reducing bond and levy demands and spreading out the benefits of a property tax reduction to everybody, not just homeowners, but to commercial and timber and ag as well. So those three ideas were presented in the House in order to get those ideas out so that all the sponsors could discuss things and hopefully come to a consensus. That didn't happen very quickly. This dragged on for about a month and a half, almost 2 months, and it wasn't.
Well, property tax has been going on for years, trying to get
Correct.
Some new things happening there and some relief.
Right. We made a small step in doing that last session, and all that really did was cap local budgets, which didn't work out very well for Ponderé and Bonner County, but some it wasn't affected that much. But nonetheless, most of us were interested in direct relief for the taxpayer, not something that would provide relief in the future. So those ideas kind of became amalgamated, and what we got was roughly it should be between $300 to $500 relief on everybody's property tax. The majority of it will be homeowners. Some of the dollars, then about three quarters goes to homeowners. Another quarter will be spread equally among all taxpayers. Another facet of that is that we're giving $100 million annually to school districts based on average daily attendance, the same way that we fund them, with a hierarchy of how those dollars are supposed to be spent. And the first step in that is that it will be bonds. So if there's building bonds, those should be paid off first. Then it goes to the levies, as we have here. We don't have a bond here, but then it will go to, it needs to be saved for future building projects. Now, the idea is this to relieve the demand on the bonds and levies and the demand that puts on the taxpayers.
So in other words, the $100 million going to the schools for these prioritized issues is a replacement of what they're losing over here on property taxes coming
Shouldn't be losing it over there.
But it's just more money for them?
Correct. It's to relieve that pressure on the taxpayer that would continually go, because they can still run bonds and levies, school districts can, or any taxing district.
Oh, okay.
But this will be – well, this is just school districts. I'm sorry.
So in addition to reducing property tax, you are also helping us in terms of – bonds and levies and building money from the state.
We're well aware of the difficulty of facilities maintenance and just new facilities throughout the state. And so this is something to help in that direction that will also benefit the taxpayer. This bill also removed the March election date that school districts are able to use. And that was a large point of contention, I think, for a lot of within education, of course, because that was one that was heavily used. But turnout is still extremely low. So.
Right.
We have been trying to remove these March and August dates for 8 to 10 years at this point, because it's always a low turnout and therefore not an accurate representation of what the people of that taxing district want. So part of this bill removed the March taxing date because we're putting more dollars in to affect bonds and levies. So hopefully they wouldn't need those elections anyway at that point. But the August date is still there if that's needed.
Yes. Lake Foundry School District has a permanent levy. If a district successfully passes four levies in a row, which I don't think anybody knew that X number of years ago when it happened here, I think it was just under the radar. But anyway, it happened. We have a permanent levy, and I cannot tell you how much I and everybody I talk to disagree with that. And is there any way that legislation – I know this is an off-the-wall question, but any way that legislation could happen that with X number of years of notice, those permanent levies have got to get grandfathered out and the voters get invited back in?
Yeah, that's actually something I did look at many years ago, and I just didn't get anywhere with it. I was a new legislator at that point and had trouble working that issue. But I agree. I don't appreciate that that's in there. It's in there. I think more districts are starting to use that, and especially after they have an increase in the levy and then they make it permanent going forward.
Right.
In doing that. So it's always something we could look at as a legislature and remove that ability to do that. And if we could.
It's not a new concept to grandfather something in. I know it wasn't in the original legislation.
Right.
But with enough notice to the school districts that have them, as I say, to invite the voters back into the process.
Right. That is an important part of it. As frustrating as it is to have these bonds and levies, but it is a participatory process then of that locality deciding whether they want to do this or not, and I think that's appropriate.
And they could go for another permanent levy. They could go through the process again, and maybe the voters would say yes.
Yeah.
You know? All right. Education, these are some smaller items, but I think they're important. And one is the launch program, House Bill 24. You voted no on that, as did our senator. Mark Sauter voted yes. I agree with you. I think, why did you vote no?
I thought it was a bit too expansive of a program, and I have taken the position years ago that when we are putting new dollars into a new program, that should be sunset. And we need to be convinced that the dollars are appropriate and need to keep going. So this was very large, a lot of money. And I thought some other directions could have been used rather than doing this. I think the Workforce Development Council is very broad in deciding what are the top 30 jobs within Idaho, trying to stimulate vocational technical education is great, and nursing falls into that also, and things that we do have a need for within the state. I just wasn't too sure about the way this program – I didn't like the way the program was going. It seemed far too expansive. The Senate put a trailer on it, which does sunset it in 6 years, so that was good. This was one of the governor's blue ribbon ideas at the beginning of the session, and it barely got out of the House. And then once the trailer bills came, that fixed it a little bit in the Senate, then the Senate voted for it and it got
through.
6 years
is still a long time, though there is a gear up and then
correct.
X amount of time to evaluate. But it's $40 million a year times, I think Scott said 5 or 6 years. So if it's 6 years, that's 200, that's a quarter of $1 billion. That's
correct.
$240 million. That's a lot of money that's just going out with no merit standards, just everybody who graduates. I feel like I want to go back to high school. Can I go back to high school and graduate again in Idaho and get 8K?
There's a couple things you have to do. There is an online program of you need to – a senior needs to apply for that, that does somewhat of a career orientation. What are your skills? What are you interested in? So you're going in a direction. Sometimes it feels like we're doing the whole school to work thing here and herding people into a certain industry, and that gives me a little discomfort.
Yes.
As well. And some of these dollars are going to higher ed and can continue to go to higher ed, where it was presented as solely vocational, technical jobs, basically. Not degrees, but jobs is the way it was presented. But there's still wiggle room in there to do that. So that's why I voted no. Hopefully it'll work out and it'll be a great program for the students of Idaho and to help us fulfill our job
needs. Let's get rid of it. So
that's why the sun sets in there. Yes.
I like the care. But I'm looking at some other issues that you voted on where you were voting fiscally conservative. This is a tough question, Sage. But the IFF gave you not a good grade in your spending. Have you seen that?
No, I don't pay attention to that.
I was looking down through when I saw that, trying to find out what the specific bills were, and they have it, and I couldn't find it. But I will find that, and we will revisit, because I don't want to leave that on the table without it being giving you an opportunity to respond.
Yeah. Sometimes there's things that we have to do statutorily that they will still say they rank it a negative ranking or whatever, but we've passed a law saying that this is going to happen, and I therefore feel obligated to do the funding for it in that sense. So maybe that's one of them.
We'll revisit that. We won't let that one hang. All right. Student IDs, did we touch on that one? What a great idea, not using student IDs for what those 100 kids that were using it
yes.
to vote.
It seems pretty basic, and especially in our college towns in doing that. So that was a good change to make.
Senate Bill 1100 also preserved bathrooms and locker rooms for the gender that people were assigned at birth. What a good deal that is.
It's strange that we even have to do that.
I know.
And thankfully, our superintendents were asking for it. The school districts needed that direction, given what the federal government is doing and the threat of lawsuits. So we needed to do that.
They needed that cover.
Correct.
The cover of state law protecting them from making that kind of a decision their district. March elections, as you said, have been taken away, but August still stands. There were a couple of school choice programs, Sage, that didn't make it. Some tuition grants and a bill would be an educational savings account, an ESA.
Right.
What happened to those, and how do you feel about them?
I support ESAs and any type of school choice. I think it's critical that parents are able to determine what is the best education form for their children that suits their children best.
The money follows.
Correct. And that's been something we've talked about for a long time. Representative Ron Mendive from South Coeur d'Alene, he has been working on this for 8 years. Right. When Nevada first did their ESA, that excited some of us, and we've been trying and trying. It's very difficult in Idaho, and other parts of the state aren't as anxious to get to that type of school choice. So I'm thankful there are some options that parents have in our current system, but to allow parents to use their tax dollars to educate their child in the best way that they see for their child and for their purposes, I think is imperative. So, House Ed Committee didn't see it that way. There's been kind of a role reversal with the redistricting in the last election. The Senate Education Committee was all for school choice at this point, but the House Education Committee was not this time. And so nothing really came out of the House.
Back and forth.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm for it. No, I'm not for it. It just seems, as you just said, that parents, you know, within whatever parameters that are reasonable, they can buy, whether they buy a Waldorf school or a public school or a charter school or a home school or a faith-based school or a military school. Do we have military schools in Idaho?
There's one, but it's
so that they could choose that. Mm-hmm. And that the money would follow, that they would not just pay taxes for education and then they have to also pay full tuition or whatever if they make a different choice. I don't think I know that public education is like a sacred cow. It's like the white cow on an highway. I honestly, Sage, can you explain that? I don't understand why it's so sacred.
There's certain parts of the state that have more comfort with that system than we do here up north. That's the only thing I've been able to glean in my years of trying to work on this issue. And I did serve on the education committee my first term and then was on an interim committee for 3 years to look at funding. So I'm familiar with this conversation in doing that. That's just my assessment. In the South and the East, they're far more comfortable with the way those are run. So we have trouble when we bring those ideas down to Boise and we encounter that that's our system. We have to appreciate it's frustrating sometimes, but not everything that we are proponents of gets through through our elected representation process, and that is very important to me. So I will never denigrate that process, even if I don't agree with some of my colleagues' solutions or ideas, but that's my job to persuade them at that point.
Well, you're a homeschool family, so you understand the additional costs that go with actually doing homeschool, which is a choice. It's not – I would just say – To my mind, they're all equal. They're equally good choices.
Yeah. Well, again, what serves the child best, because not everybody fits
as long
into
as
that.
The parents get to make
system.
That decision.
Correct.
All right. We're up against our break. We're going to take that break now. We will be right back.
Come on, relax with us on a summer night. The Indians baseball makes you feel just right. We're here to have fun.
Daytime baseball is back today at Avista Stadium. Your Spokane Indians open a six-game homestand against the Seattle Mariners affiliate, the Everett Aqua Sox, and today's first pitch is at 11:05 this morning. This morning, your Spokane Indians host an Education Day game for all elementary schools in the Spokane area. School's more fun at the ballpark. Gates open at 10, first pitch at 11:05. There's baseball through Sunday at Avista Stadium, including First Responders Appreciation Night on Thursday, courtesy of Inland Northwest AGC. Valley Glass presents fireworks this Friday. And Saturday is another Yokes Family Feast. For tickets and more information, go to SpokaneIndians.com. Today's our Education Day game. First pitch this morning at 11:05. And as always, free parking. For tickets and game times, go to SpokaneIndians.com.
Roots in your sewer line? Leaks in your underground water pipes? North Point Trenchless can replace those pipes without expensive and damaging trenching. Spare your landscaping, decks, and driveways from disaster. North Point Trenchless also offers horizontal drilling, sewer camera inspections, and general excavation. Call today at 208-304-5712. Visit their Facebook page or northpointtrenchless.com. That's North Point Trenchless, serving the entire Inland Northwest.
Hi, this is Jason Hansen. I'm a former CIA officer and best-selling author on safety and preparedness. The fact is, things are getting downright scary for everyone who's storing their wealth in the banks. We just saw the collapse of three major banks, and I would urge you to consider protecting your wealth ASAP. If even a tiny percentage of Americans attempt to withdraw their savings, we would see a collapse of the entire banking system, sending us into a modern-day Great Depression. Fortunately, there is a way for you to avoid this. It starts with contacting Advantage Gold. If you have an IRA or 401k, Advantage Gold can help convert those paper assets into physical gold and silver. This is the process that I recommend everybody use as a hedge against rapid inflation and to protect your retirement wealth from the banks. Take control of your financial safety today. Call 800-900-8000 to get your free gold investment kit from Advantage Gold. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Consult with your financial advisor before investing.
Call 800-900-8000.
Netflix, Amazon Prime, HBO, Showtime. How many streaming services are you paying for? If only there was a way to track and cancel subscriptions easily. Well, there is. Just download the Rocket Money app. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up. From there, decide whether to keep it or cancel it with just a tap in the app. To find out more about Rocket Money, go to rocketmoney.com/save or download the Rocket Money app from the Apple App or Google Play stores. Rocket Money, the money app that works for you.
KSPT 1400, KBFI 1450, North Idaho's radio.
Everybody, welcome back in. We are here talking with Sage Dixon. He is our state representative from District 1. There are two, and he is seat B.
I am seat B, yes.
Okay. Sage Dixon, and thank you again for being here. All right, let's turn our attention to libraries because there is a East Bonner County Library, and all libraries, I guess, in Idaho are having elections for their Board of Trustees. And here locally, we have Susan Shea, the incumbent, and Stacy Rodriguez, the challenger. And they are coming down with a big line drawn in the sand, and that is what has to do with restricting access, not burning the books,
correct,
not banning, just geographically in the library restricting obscene material. First, and that's House Bill 314. How did you vote? What did you think about the bill?
I voted in favor of it, and I think it's imperative. We did something
in favor to restrict
access, correct. As last year it was House Bill 666, similar thing, higher penalty. They reduced the penalty in this one that if you are willfully exposing children to obscene material, then a parent could have a lawsuit, essentially. So I think that's a great idea. It is a growing impression that I have of this desire that the culture has to over-sexualize children and truly destroy their souls. And what's how they view things from that point forward is never the same at that point. So to install some sort of prohibition on that and protection for a child within the libraries and schools, which is the only places you can't be held accountable. Everywhere else, obscene material is forbidden except in libraries and schools, which is such an odd dynamic there. It's imperative to do that.
Yeah. I think that when that loophole or that exception was passed for libraries and school districts, the idea was, I'm sure, the legislators were thinking of reasonable sex education, like in high school.
Yeah, or even just anatomy classes, right?
Or anatomy mm-hmm. classes, but it's been way far beyond that. House Bill 314 passed the House, passed the Senate, went to the governor's desk, and what did the governor do?
Well, the governor vetoed it, and we had, at this point, already overridden one veto. We had one veto we did not override earlier, which was kind of a test balloon that the governor floated. It was a bill to allow parents to teach their children how to drive. Very benign. He vetoed it. The House did not override that veto, which sends a signal to him that if he's vetoing something else, he will survive it. We had a talk. We have a lot. Half the legislatures knew. And many people there were not brought up to speed necessarily on how we handle that as a legislative body versus an executive branch action. And it's not very, I will say, no longer about the bill so much at that point, but as far as upholding our branch of government.
Right.
Not required, but nonetheless, this is something that passed off our floor. Are we the elected body that makes decisions for law, or are we going to default to the governor? We had a talk with some folks, and that's how we got 292, actually, because which was our property tax reduction.
Okay.
The governor vetoed that,
yes,
and we were able to override that veto in the House and the Senate. 314 had a strong majority in the Senate. There was no question of whether they could override the veto in the Senate, but because it was a House bill, it comes to the House first. We had a caucus meeting again, and people are always free to make up their own minds, vote according to their conscience, but nonetheless, similar discussion. We are the legislature. We made this decision. This came out of our body. It's wise to uphold your branch of government. That's why there's the separation of powers and the tension that exists between them and why we want to maintain that. We lost it by one vote, meaning we lost the ability to override. You need 2/3 to override, 47 votes in the House. We ended up with 46. Probably would have been 45. A Democrat actually voted the wrong way, and she asked to change her vote.
Mark Sauter voted the wrong way. He did not vote to
override. He did not vote to override, correct. But there were.
And I think it's important, our audience hears, he did not vote to override the governor's veto of a bill that would have just restricted obscene materials available to kids in libraries.
Yeah.
I don't understand that. I'm hoping that I can get him on the air so he can explain his thinking. Okay, a couple of things on this that I want people to understand and for you to explain. First of all, there is something floating all over Sandpoint that protecting these obscene materials in the library is an issue of free speech. And we know that obscene materials are not protected under the First Amendment right of freedom of speech. And that was passed by the United States Supreme Court in?
It was 53, I believe?
Yeah, 57.
57, 19.
Let me see 19. If I actually wrote that down.
I
57,
okay.
And it was reaffirmed in 1973, and there have been other cases that have come and gone.
Right.
But since 57, they have affirmed obscenity is not protected under freedom of speech. It's illegal. for right. minors. It's illegal. And we have people speaking at library forums and speaking in the newspaper that just say the opposite of right. that.
I think that's just one of those things people echo to try and shut the other side down and
right.
saying that you can't step over this right. line here because it's free speech. And that has become to encompass so much more than it originally was intended to encompass.
Exactly.
And especially when you're in public buildings such as schools and libraries where these things are being presented. And that goes back to our other conversation of obscene materials, or you will be arrested if you present them to a child in any other environment.
In any other environment, right.
But with a library and a school, then no, you're safe to do that. Yeah. And it seems like people are driven to do that. And that's very troubling to
yeah.
do that. So just to provide
that. This bill that missed by one vote of becoming law, House Bill 314, was going to reverse that loophole and say, no, you are
Correct.
Not going to get an exemption. You can't have this material. They can have it in the library.
Correct. Yes, it can be there. It just has to be in an area that's not accessible to children.
And
managed that way. Now, if
right.
some jerk takes a book out and puts it in the child section, they won't be held accountable for that.
They need to get it back into the
Correct.
Corral.
Correct.
Yeah. All right. So do you think that this will come up? Oh, I have another. Well, let me finish that question.
Okay.
Do you think that this House Bill 314 dealing with obscene materials in libraries and schools will come up again next year, and will it pass?
I'm confident it will come up again. Whether it passes or not, I don't know. The legislative makeup will be the same. The germane committees will be the same that it needs to go through, but I'm fairly confident that they might make another couple tweaks, try and address some other problems. They were working with the librarians and schools and everything to do this, to try and make it as palatable as possible.
Right.
So I'm confident it will come back. I can't guarantee whether it'll pass.
Was this the bill when the governor was trying to decide to sign into law or veto, where he sent out an automated text invitation that said, text me to people in Idaho, text me and tell me what you think, and that he used that poll when he vetoed it? He said, well, the phone calls I'm getting. Are you aware of that?
I am not aware of that,
there
Barbara. That's news to me.
I used it. It was out. People were sending it out on texts and I guess emails, but you had to use your cell. First of all, you had to have a cell phone to participate.
Mm-hmm.
You'd click on it, and you just went into an automatic call.
Interesting.
And it just said, we're taking your opinion on this bill. Do you vote yes for the bill? Do you vote no? And apparently the governor said that, yes, he was interested. I was so offended, even though I did participate. I was offended because, hey, you guys are doing your job. That's what our representatives are doing.
Correct.
I don't want Governor Little over here taking some kind of a poll.
No, that's no way to govern.
Limited people who
right.
found out about it, and then he's being swayed by that.
That became, there was kind it was on steroids, if you will. Politics went on steroids with different groups. The cities were pushing back really hard on decisions that legislature was making that would affect them. There were medical groups that were pushing really hard and becoming very political. And so this is another facet of that. I know that the Farm Bureau encouraged all its members to call the governor and say that they wanted him to sign the property tax relief bill. And so that has become something known with this governor, I think, because
yeah.
it worked when we had our ballot initiative corrective legislation, if we can say that, 5 years ago, to make it a little more restrictive, honestly, that the governor said, well, I received this many phone calls, and so I didn't – I vetoed it then at that point.
Yeah.
I'm going to paraphrase Edmund Burke, and it's you betray – your duty to the public when you just chase after whatever the majority wants in that sense. Because even though the position of governor is a little different, but specifically as a representative, we are elected and we need to live up to how we say we will govern, not go back and forth at the whim of the people at that
totally.
Point.
Totally, yeah.
And so that's a bit troubling for me. I did not know that.
Well said. He needs to make – he's the governor. He's got to make up his own mind. If
right.
he has such an overwhelming problem, then veto it and defend it. But don't tell me that you took a poll.
Yeah, that becomes a scapegoat.
Exactly. Yeah. It just protects him. Who's our next governor going to be, by the way?
I do not know.
We are
There's a lot of conjecture about that.
We're looking for a new new governor. That was me talking, not Sage. Okay, you got to separate those voices. All right. So the and just so our audience understands, the reason this is getting a lot of airtime right now is, ladies and gentlemen, you get to make a decision. We have two people running for the East Bonner County Library School District Trustee Board. One is in favor of keeping these obscene materials out and about in the library and incorrectly claiming freedom of speech issue, which it is not. And we have that's Susan Shea, the incumbent. And we have another candidate who is very much concerned and wants these obscene materials restricted. And her name is Stacey Rodriguez. So you get to make up your own mind. You get to vote and you get to decide if that is something that's important to you, that would make your vote go one way or the other for when you choose this trustee position. As of May 16th, we have an election coming up. All right, we're up against our last break. We're going to take that right now.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, call SelectQuote at 1-800-452-5050. That's 1-800-452-5050. Or go to SelectQuote.com. 1-800-452-5050. That's 1-800-452-5050.
SelectQuote. We shop. You save. Full details on example policies at selectquote.com/commercials.
This is a special alert to all Americans who own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles, with an auto warranty about to expire, or with no warranty coverage at all. Due to a decline in the economy, CarShield is announcing a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that is now available to the public to save any driver out-of-pocket expenses on future auto repairs. Call now to find out how you can pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Yes, you heard that correctly. Pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. An open phone line has been established for all drivers to call for a free, quick quote. Call 800-736-6158 now. Drivers who are covered will not have to pay for covered repairs again. This protection plan is at an all-time low. Additionally, drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Call us for your free quick quote today. 800-736-6158. That's 800-736-6158. What do you have to lose? Call 800-736-6158. Again, 800-736-6158.
Cashback is not available on gas in New Jersey and Wisconsin.
Susan, it's so great to finally be able to get together again.
Oh, it sure is. And I really appreciate you picking up the bill.
I'm happy to. I've got the extra cash. Since we've all been driving so much more again, I've been using Upside, the free app that pays you cash back for every gallon of gas you buy.
Wait a minute. Are you saying you actually get paid cash when you buy gas with the Upside app?
Yes. I get real cash back just for buying the gas I was going to buy anyway.
But is it a hassle to use?
No. It's super fast and easy, and I can cash out whenever I want.
That's a total no-brainer. I'm downloading the free Upside app now.
Download the free Upside app now to earn real cash back every time you buy gas. Use promo code HEAT for an extra 25 cents a gallon bonus on your first tank. That's promo code HEAT. You can cash out anytime right to your bank account, to PayPal, or an e-gift card for Amazon and other brands. Just download the free Upside app and use promo code HEAT for a 25 cents a gallon bonus on your first tank. That's code HEAT.
97.1 FM and 1450 AM, 1400 AM, North Idaho's radio.
Hey everybody, welcome back in. We're talking today with Sage Dixon, and honestly, I am so blessed to be able to sit here week after week and be one-on-one with either our state representatives or people who serve and work in our community. It is a lot of fun and very enjoyable and very informative. So thank you, Sage, for helping us out. There was another bill that you voted in favor of, and I thank you for that, and that was the Stop ESG. that was passed and signed into law. Explain what that deal is to our listeners.
Okay. Well, we have worked on that for, 2 years now. It was something that I was starting to look at the beginning of the session in 22. And then a good friend of mine from the eastern part of the state, Representative Barbara Ehart, was looking at it also. We actually had Glenn Beck come to the Capitol to speak about that. And that, like Glenn Beck, that doesn't help. That turns it into more of a sideshow to people that really don't understand. And it's a tough topic to grasp.
But he introduced a lot of people to ESG.
He did.
They'd never even heard of it.
Correct. But in the legislative environment, it's hard when it is a celebrity and a personality coming in that sometimes doesn't work in the best way that you may hope, whereas the general public has learned a lot from him. I'm very thankful for the work that he's done on it. Environmental, social justice, basically, and then governance, how your boards are governed. And it has become something that's pushed, was primarily through the private financial markets, global financial markets, to force people to do business a certain way. And if they didn't like their business, the capital wouldn't flow to your business. And this is how we learned about it. It now has worked its way into the federal government. And more the federal government agencies are using this as a standard. They're trying to apply that standard to the private markets through the federal government as well. We as a state wanted to stop that and trying to do that. And we had some legislation last year that gave direction to our fund managers for all of our state fund dollars, our retirement and other things, saying that if you're going to use this as a metric of investing, you need to let us know, because it's proven to be a very poor investment vehicle. Despite what they say, it doesn't give greater returns. It's solely social justice, essentially, or environmental justice.
Green, diversity, wokeness, and that's you invest in companies that are typically going to lose money for you.
You personally, if you want to do it, go for it. Go into those funds. But when you have fund managers and the larger ones, Vanguard, Fidelity, State Street, or BlackRock, not Fidelity, we're forcing everybody into those funds for their political purposes and ideological purposes, not the great returns that they should be seeking.
So stopping ESG, environmental, social, governance, financial restrictions, what did you actually stop? They just have to report to you if they use that?
That was the first step. But now it is that if a bank is going to be boycotting certain industries, not lending to those industries, then we will no longer use that bank for our state funds.
Okay.
And there were had to do with contracting also. If you're going to be contracting with the state, you cannot use ESG policies and your subcontractors and other things like that. Anything tied to state dollars, that's what we've restricted. If ESG is there, you either have to tell the treasurer and report to the legislature, or we're not going to use you. That's the extent of our jurisdiction. We're not going to reach into the private industry.
No, but they can do what they want with their money.
Correct. But for state funds and what we can control, that's what we've done.
I'm sure you know Julie Ellsworth. She's been on my program twice.
Yes.
She is so wonderful to talk to. She's like you. She's just very informative and very clear. And she's was a part of, and it may still be going on, other state treasurers who are suing and pushing back against the federal government. And they're saying, you know, how she needs to invest her money. And she's just so great because she just says, like, no way.
She's done a wonderful job.
Yeah.
And I think there's 28 state financial officers that have joined together. So like the largest one, or the first one to really get hit hard, was West Virginia. Texas also, but West Virginia with its coal industry.
And
they started to see it first. And they had a very active treasurer in that state. And so all those states then start to react against whoever is, say, coming against West Virginia or Texas or us. And so that's a lot of dollars. If it's just Idaho with, say, $30 billion or something in assets, but you get 28 states together, that really piques the interest of a larger financial institution.
You know, 28, I don't know why it wouldn't be 50. I guess there would be monetary issues of putting forward joining a suit like this, but I can't imagine it wouldn't be 50 states. Maybe California. They can,
there's a couple that probably don't want to join, but I agree that that's politics at one point. But I'm thankful for the work she's done, and she helped every step of the way with this legislation. She was a prime reason that it got done.
Yeah, I just had her on like a month, or maybe it's been a little bit longer.
Yeah, she's done wonderful.
That's excellent. And recently reelected the last election.
Correct. So she's got,
she'll be with us for
three more years in office.
Excellent. All right. Another tough question for you that I just came across this morning, and that is that you are a member of and an officer in an organization called ALEC. And the issue was saying that this organization was taking ideas from outside of Idaho, gasp, that we would use, like we have to reinvent the wheel. But anyway, that we would use ideas from outside of Idaho, maybe from West Virginia, and bring them into Idaho if they're of value to us. And they didn't like that outside influence.
Right.
And it was kind of outside money, too, that was supporting. So what is ALEC? What's your involvement in it, and why do you like it?
Okay. ALEC is a state legislator organization. So state legislators from all around the country can join ALEC. There's three main ones. There's NCSL.
The legislature itself or legislators?
Individuals.
Individuals.
Individual
okay.
legislators, not the legislature itself. There is the National Conference of State Legislators, NCSL. There is the Council on State Governments, which is CSG. And then there's ALEC, which is the American Legislative Exchange Council. Those are the three ones that most state legislators encounter. And what it's exactly what you described, which isn't a bad thing. You go to annual meetings, and there's little subcommittee meetings that happen all year long where you discuss policy, and you generate model policy according to the people in that group. ALEC is the conservative one, not explicitly. Democrats are welcome to come. It's open to anybody, but it tends to be more conservative. Ronald Reagan helped with the inception of it. We've had a lot of Trump staffers come speak. Rick Perry speaks. Governor DeSantis speaks. It's the people we get at ALEC or tend to be on the conservative spectrum of the Republican Party. My opinion, others might disagree. The Council on State Governments is more moderate in the middle, and NCSL is more of the big government, Democrat left-leaning portion of this. So a legislator can pick and choose where they feel they fit best and get ideas. There, as you said, gasp, there might be a good idea in West Virginia, like education savings accounts, because they passed a universal education savings account. So when we're developing legislation, it's good to speak to other legislators who've done this, yeah. to hear what the arguments are, to look and, oh, that's a great idea. I would like to try and implement that in my legislation here in this state to do that. That's why I like ALEC. I chair the Federalism and International Relations Task Force. Federalism is incredibly important to me. Maintaining our autonomy as a state, federalism, not bigger federal government federalism.
Right.
There's a confusion sometimes. So through that position, I'm able to stimulate federalist principles in many other states for people that come to those meetings and have speakers come to help push back on the federal government. And that's the role that I provide in that organization in doing that.
There was another complaint, and honestly, I know where they're coming from when they voiced this, and that was that you made a trip to Germany on behalf or with the ALEC group. And, it looks like they're, buying, it's right. giving you lobbyists, giving you goodies like a trip to Germany, and that it's going to influence you in a way that we can't influence
right.
you, because I can't send you to Germany. You know what I'm saying, Sage?
I do.
So can you answer that quickly? We're running out of time, but,
sure.
How do you respond to that you're not being influenced by trips or something that they can offer you?
Well, this was somewhat of a pointed discussion in the last election cycle. As I sat here with my opponent with you, and I don't care. I mean, I do. I look at it, but I'm not influenceable. I will say that. I have my principles, and I stick to them. So I don't care what anybody's giving me at that point. It won't change who I am and what I'm doing. I was invited to go speak on an international federalism conference in Munich to do that. It was myself, a Scottish member of parliament, a lady from Myanmar, and a professor from Ethiopia. We were discussing the various aspects of federalism and doing that. That was when I went, and that to me is a great opportunity. Yes, it was paid for by a German think tank to do that. I was their guest. Last year, I was asked to go again to do a legislative exchange with other legislators from around the country. What I do there is I try and promote Idaho business, and I try and bring back ideas here. They're looking for semiconductor developers, so I go to Micron and say, hey, here's an opportunity in Bavaria. Boise uses geothermal. Munich uses geothermal, trying to put them together. So I'm always looking at a benefit for our state, not for myself.
All right. That's going to be the last word. Thank you, Sage, so much for that. Because, you know, people need to know. They need to understand. These things don't come up. And, you know, so they need to understand. All right. Sage Dixon, thank you again. Next Monday, I have an extra show. If I can line up the candidates, I'm having trouble getting the hospital taxing district candidates to line up for me. I'll be here on Tuesday with the two incumbents, or I'm sorry, the two challenge to the hospital tax district. So Dwayne Scheffler and Catherine Busey will be here the following week. I've got the library candidates. So we have a lot going on for you here. Stick around. We are here to help keep you informed. So until then, this is Barbara saying thank you. Take care of yourself and may God richly bless you.